Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Rear Winging It, the F1 podcast. I'm your host, Harry McKay, and I'm joined by my fellow co-host,
Ellie Ledwell.
It's good to be back, Ellie, but I'm quite sad because this is the last race of the season.
It is sad times indeed.
I feel like it's only just started. I mean, the year has flown by.
I mean, we did miss a few in the middle.
We didn't talk about that.
But it has gone quite quickly, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm still enraged about last year.
Some of us moved on, some of us didn't.
Some of us are still in therapy thought for it.
Yeah, Ted Kravitz is on your side.
100%.
So Abu Dhabi, obviously the last race of the season every year now. First thoughts, how did you find it?
I quite like the track, to be honest. I always find it's a nice conclusion.
Yeah.
There's always a lot of famous people Brundle doesn't recognise on the grid, which is one of the highlights always. So I like that it is, I'm used to it being the last one of the season. I quite like it being the last one of the season, but I did find this race a bit boring.
Yeah, I like the track as well. I think it's a good track. I mean, it was all right. I do like it as a conclusion. I think it's okay. It's always a good atmosphere. As you said, lots of famous people, which is not, you know, sometimes it annoys me, but for a last track, it's fine. It's always, you know, can be a bit dull. Obviously, you've got the two big straights. I think we should talk about DRS and how we thought that was over the season. Because I think here it did show a bit. On the straights, you would just rocket past people often. So I think maybe that should be toned down a bit.
Yeah, I think because you can follow so much easier this year, we've spoken about it before, like it gives you too much of an advantage when you can't, you get past a car and before you'd be able to pull a second clear within a lap, you see the cars like hanging on longer and there's more DRS trains. And I do think the effects of DRS have been too powerful this year.
Yeah, it's like it. I mean, it was kind of to be expected, I suppose, because you didn't really know how the cars were going to act. But now they've got a better idea. Just turning it down a little bit, seeing what that would do. Because obviously, I suppose the aim is to get rid of it completely eventually. But for now, tone it down a bit. And it wasn't the most exciting race of this season.
No, especially coming off the high of Brazil last week. Yeah, it felt a bit, oh, if only that had been the conclusion.
Yeah, it would have been a lot better. I think there's people out there who want it to be the last track who are not so much a fan of Abu Dhabi, but it was an extra race. It was fine. There was a few, I was going to say thrilling, but maybe not thrilling, but exciting chases of constructors' battles going on.
Yeah, we had our eye on a few different people and a few different points, and there was a few movers and shakers on the last day, so that's always interesting, keeps it alive.
Midfield battles and battle for second place.
Yeah, especially when Max and Red Bull wrapped up the main two prizes, what seemingly forever ago. It gives you something else to look out for.
So obviously qualifying, we had hints of maybe Mercedes. What didn't have quite as fast as they were in practice and in Brazil. In practice, they were a bit slower. And then their speed never really came back for them, did they?
No, in some races, they've just had not much speed on the qualifying because they've struggled getting their tyres up to temperature and getting them working for them. And sometimes in the races, they have better luck. But it has seemed like they've not qualified as well this year, whereas the Ferrari seem to have qualified better and not done as well in the races. Mercedes seem to have maybe been a bit the other way around. Obviously, Mercedes didn't do very well at all in the season and compared to their usual high standards, but they just couldn't seem to get it going.
No, I mean, Leclerc has quite a lot of poles, I mean, this season. And if you compare that to his race wins, I mean, it's awful. I mean, he, for a multitude of reasons, he's fallen away. Whereas the Mercedes, seem to have gained their points through the races and coming back, so I mean, at the end of the day, it's Sunday that wins you the points, so I think you'd rather have that.
Not all the time, though, Harry, because obviously you can get 8 points for winning a sprint race these days.
God damn it. It really has changed that saying, hasn't it? we ended up with a Red Bull 1-2. No one could touch Max. He was ahead of the field at every...
gallivanting.
Every opportunity. Ferrari 3-4. And the Mercedes 5-6. So quite a, you know, expected, I suppose, but...
Yeah, they were going into the arc like that, yeah, weren't they? Two by two.
And then you had Lando Norris as well, seventh, just out of position, as always, I suppose.
But... As always, especially when you compare Daniel coming in at 13th. The dominance that Lando has exerted over Daniel Ricciardo this season's been incredible in terms of qualifying and in the race as well. Like, the points difference in the championship is insane. So
yeah, I mean, they had their battle with Alpine going on. And I mean, I like Alonso Ocon, not so much, but I was really kind of rooting for their cars to just break down. And when Alonso did, I felt really guilty. I just thought, oh my God, that's my fault.
Wishing ill of a two-time world champion.
Well, that's, I felt really bad, but it didn't matter in the end. The points gap was too big for them, but yeah, Ricciardo, he did have a three-place penalty from last race.
Yeah.
Which I'm still adamantly against. I think it's too harsh.
I think it was too harsh. In the opening lap, things happen, and three places was a lot.
Yeah, and it just feels like you're just kicking a man when he's down, you know?
This is his last race. They didn't need it. They didn't need it for...
No. Should we get onto the race breakdown?
Let's do it.
So, race starts. Checo actually has a better getaway off the line. But Max, he's unbeatable at this point, I think. he sails away into the lead and doesn't really move from there. Hamilton does get past Sainz at turn one. Leclerc tries to overtake on Perez at turn five. I thought that was quite bold. I don't think he was ever going to...
No, it didn't.
Get
it didn't,
the position.
It didn't seem like it, no.
And then it put him on the back foot. And he was then under threat from behind.
Yeah, from Hamilton
behind.
Yeah, from
Hamilton. So, obviously he was all right because Hamilton goes over the sausage curb.
And he was in the air.
He really flew. I know drivers have talked about sausage curbs in the past and how they don't really like them.
They are dangerous.
And this did just seem another reason of, you know, if you're penalising for track limits, they know they shouldn't go off. So it does seem like it's there just to break the cars, really.
And especially how low the floor is this year and how big the floor is this year, it does seem like, of course, it's going to cause damage. Of course, it's going to cause injury. Of course, it's going to cause crashes when someone's going airborne in a car that's 2 metres by 5 meters.
Yeah, massive. I mean, the team for quite a while was saying there was nothing wrong with the car. Hamilton was adamant there was. His pace after this just didn't stack up to Russell, at least for the first stint. So it's possible there was some damage.
He was losing.
It seems likely.
A few tenths a lap, so
compared
quite
to the others. So he obviously then did have a resurgent second half, we'll get to, but he then has to give up the place because he went off the track as well, so...
Which I found kind of interesting because he did have to give it back.
Yeah.
They came on the team radio and they said that the FIA, they said race control are telling them to give the place back, but they normally let the team squabble it out, and then as we saw in the last race, or maybe the one before, I can't remember... Ocon was it? He got a 5 second penalty.
Yeah,
but or maybe it was Gasly. I can't remember. They said, "Oh, it was worth it because I earned more than 5 seconds on the road, so it was worth not giving that place back."
So maybe this is a reaction to that. But yeah, the official stance this season has been let the teams work it out amongst themselves, and then if they don't do it right, penalise them. Which is slightly odd, I think.
Yes,
because again, like, you know, they might do what you said about last time of just thinking, oh, the penalty's worth it. I'm not gonna give the place back. And then, obviously, it means less... If they are faster and they have to give the place back, it means we get to see less racing because then they're not attacking again. So
yeah.
I'm glad they got involved there, but again, they need to clear that up, whether they're going to leave it to the teams. So Hamilton then does get signs out of turn 8, and George regains P6, which he lost to Norris. For a second there, Norris, he always gets good starts. He's always sort of attacking off the line, but the car just doesn't seem to have the pace.
No, definitely not. And I think George, he was in the faster car and he shouldn't have lost the position to begin with. I think normally when there's just a lot of people going into one corner, things happen.
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah. Sometimes you fall out of your position.
I was surprised it took until lap 5, though, to get back past. I thought he would make it a bit quicker.
Yeah, yeah. For a second there, I thought, especially with Hamilton going slower, you know, it was, or maybe the Mercedes really don't have speed here, but he did get past eventually. Did take him much longer than it should have, but... So lap 9, Hamilton's still complaining about losing power. Doesn't think his car is totally working.
Yeah, he can't change gear, right? He gets stuck in 7th. Oh, no, was that later on?
That was later on, yeah.
But he was losing power, and it was quite evident because everyone just started swarming past him, it seemed, I guess. Yeah. They told him some buttons to press on the steering wheel and got it sorted. But
So Sainz gets past Russell.
Hamilton.
Oh, yeah, sorry, Hamilton.
Sorry.
And then Ocon and Vettel have a little scrap at turn 9. Ocon stays in front. Vettel was really pushing.
Yeah.
Especially in that first stint. His last race, which is, you know, it's very sad. He's been there for quite a while and he's one of the last of these old guard now. But I think it was a good final race on his side. I think he drove fantastic.
I think he gave a good show because obviously when he was at Ferrari, he had a few years where he wasn't racing to his best. Yeah. And I feel like it was a good send off to be like, I never lost it. Yeah. I was always there and thereabouts. But 4-time world champion, it's always sad to see someone like that go, someone who's respected so much, especially off the track.
Yeah, he's done a lot for getting other issues involved with Formula One. I know he's been a great steward for the other drivers and in contact with the FIA, as well as social issues and issues about money and
the
FIA and the environment. So it's sad to see him go, but I like that he was pushing the handing over the baton to the younger drivers. Alonso then joins Ocon and Vettel in that battle for P8.
I did think when you have Alonso and Ocon in a battle together, that it doesn't always end with all parties involved finishing the race. So I was a bit worried that Vettel was going to get caught in the middle.
This was the point where I was like, leave Vettel alone, take each other out. This is where it really came from, though. Just please. Then I saw where Daniel Ricciardo was on track and I thought, well, it's never going to happen.
No.
So they didn't come together, Alonso and Ocon.
Hopefully.
And I know we're talking about last race, Alonso and them having a bit of tension and Alonso being like, just one more race, get it over with. For a last race together, they kept it civil on track.
I think the team had definitely reinforced that. I think the team was saying to them, it's one more race, keep it nice and clean, we need the points.
Yeah, just any points and you're pretty much
19 points seemed insurmountable anyway for McLaren, but... It also doesn't imagine losing that, like, however million pounds, £10 million, say, because your drivers...
Yeah, couldn't keep it together for one more race.
Yeah.
So, lap 13, the pit window opens. Stroll pits first for hard tyres. It seemed like the hard tyres were a fairly solid tyre. Most drivers used them.
Yeah, they were quite effective, especially I think the Mercedes, when they went onto them, they did actually manage to handle that compound quite well, which is something we've seen all year. The Mercedes looked the best it looks really on the hard compound, but I guess lap 13, that's quite early for the pit window to open, so people who were pitting them were definitely looking at a two-stop strategy. Yeah.
I think before the race started, there was a bit of uncertainty. And then the degradation did seem a little bit higher than they expected, so it was a two-stop strategy for most of them. Some teams, especially Verstappen and Leclerc, sort of made that decision even later to then go on to the one-stop strategy. I think only Magnussen started on soft tyres, and they didn't seem very effective.
They didn't work out that well. I think he started off like 17th, was it? And he didn't really manage to climb 16th. Sorry, he started 16th, and he didn't really manage to climb anywhere in that opening.
In fact, by the
stint.
Even the you know pit stops sort of around this window, he was then starting to lose places. The tires really fell off. So I don't think that was the right strategy, and it was only him that did it. So it seemed like the teams agreed. We then had two laps later, Ocon, Yuki, Schumacher and Gasly all pit for the Hards. So it seemed like they had a little bit of data from Stroll, and the Hard tyres was pretty much where it was going at. Again, these guys were the two stop people.
Yeah, people who had committed, I think, to the two stop, people whose tyres were falling off, because otherwise you'd want to push your first stint a bit longer out, 58 laps. Pitting that early in is telling.
Perez then comes in for the Hard tyres. Again, seemingly came in before Verstappen, who had the lead of the race. And maybe suggesting they were going to split the strategy at this point, or at least give Verstappen a bit longer to see how Perez was performing on the Hards.
I guess maybe they were trying to undercut with Leclerc to put Perez on the front foot, because obviously that's where the battle of the day really, where people's eyes were focused on.
Russell and Norris came in as well. Russell had a slow stop. I think it was about 5.2 seconds.
I thought 5.8.
Or maybe 5.8. Yeah, it was around long. 5 seconds, so it was really long. And he had a dangerous release into Lando's path. Again, they really just were not looking at where they were going. So yeah, this was quite an open and shut, dangerous stop.
Yeah, I guess when they were looking at the pit window, they had predicted it as a 3 second stop, and they weren't imagining anyone else was going to be in their way, but
obviously they should be looking.
It did cost Norris time as well, because he had to slam on his brakes, and his brakes were smoking when he went for his box.
Yeah, that was a shame. And then Russell got a 5 second penalty for that, which was, I think, pretty justified.
Yeah, definitely. It was dangerous, and there are people there. You know, we've seen incidents before with the pit crew, and I think it is very important.
Yeah, just to really hammer home that, you know, they need to be extra careful, and it's worth taking an extra second to look around and make sure you're free to go.
Yeah.
And I think when they got back out on track and this penalty came through, they were saying, we'll take this at the next pit stop. So they were pretty much set on a two-stop, which makes sense considering when they pitted.
Yeah, lap 16 was probably too early to go, even on the hard compound.
Yeah. So lap 18, Sainz pits and emerges in front of Russell. So that worked for him, the overcut, helped by, obviously, Russell.
The slow pit and then the unsafe release, obviously, that caused them
caused even more time.
Yeah.
So that was maybe more, I can't quite remember the gap there, but that was maybe more luck rather than strategy for them.
Maybe, yeah.
But you need luck in F1, so
definitely.
He came out in front. Leclerc then pits lap 21, comes out third on the road. So this was his first stop. He was behind Perez and Verstappen, so no change there. He did pit obviously later than Perez by 5 laps, so that becomes quite important later on. He had a little bit more leeway than the some of the other drivers, but not a huge amount. He's obviously still has quite a long way to go on those tyres.
Yeah, you're still looking at nearly 40 laps, aren't you? So that's a long time to go, but 5 laps entire age is quite a lot. That can be a few tenths or so, or maybe, you know, that's the difference between someone catching you and someone not, and as it turned out to be.
So Vettel, meanwhile, lap 26, finally pits for the first time, drops to P19. He obviously was quite up, worked his way up the field quite a lot of that because of the pit stops around him.
Yes.
He was not happy with this strategy, staying out so long.
He wasn't happy. He was saying that he felt like a sitting duck, but he was also encouraging the team to push long, to try and go for a long stint, because I think they knew their battle wasn't with the top six, and even really the McLarens going and the Alpines. Their battle was further back with the Alphas. So I guess he wasn't happy to be a sitting duck and to be overtaken so easily, but I think he was also had his head screwed on, and he knew the best strategy for them at that point was to push long and try and get the most out of that first set of tyres.
This is when my prayers came true, although I did feel bad. Lap 28, Alonso retiring with a suspected water leak. The water leak, I think, this is the fourth or fifth time that's been the suspected cause.
Yeah, it's been the party line.
Yeah.
It's been sad to see Alonso go out not able to finish his season the way he would have wanted, and he's moving on to a new team, so maybe a fresh start for him next year.
Yeah, and I think that must be part of it, because it must be so frustrating, you know, 41 years of age and still driving like a madman, you know. He's still got that spark and that talent, but your car just falls away under you over and over again through no fault of your own. I mean, we talked about, I think, Alonso and Ocon, their points difference, and Ocon finishing ahead of him a few times in the past. But I think a lot of that is due to just really, really being unlucky.
Yeah, because there's not a massive difference. I think there's 10 points between them,
yeah,
which isn't huge, especially if one of them were to finish well. That's one race where someone's had an issue or someone's crashed out or someone's been hit, you know. That it was really maybe one or two finishes that he was lacking, and I think that that's not necessarily his fault.
Especially because some of these retirements have come from him being firmly in the points and, you know, looking like he would finish in the points. So just a lot more unluckiness for Alonso. I think he's used to it by now. So lap 34, Perez pits again, attempting to undercut Leclerc, stay ahead. I think this seemed like the right strategy. Obviously, he needed another set of tyres, I think. I don't think he would have got to the end because he pitted earlier. But Ferrari take the decision not to pit Leclerc.
Yeah, I think that it was important for Ferrari to do something different, because they didn't seem to have the same pace on track in a straight line. Obviously, we know the Red Bull's been very quick this year, and it's a track with some long straights, so it does bode well for the Red Bull car. You just thought if he does catch him, he will pass him with some ease. So it didn't seem wise to put them on the same strategy. It seemed wise to differentiate.
Yeah. It was definitely a gamble, but I think it was the smart thing to do. And I think Leclerc was had some private chats with his team about strategy, and they definitely paid off this race. Whether that's luck or whether that's they actually knew what they were doing is, you know, it's Ferrari, you can never tell. But
they've not had the best track record this season.
to finish on a high probably has saved somebody's job.
Definitely. But maybe not Matteo Bonotti.
No. So lap 40, Schumacher tags Latifi at turn 5. They both spin, but managed to stay on track.
It was the most beautiful collision I think I've ever seen.
Yeah, I think you said it was synchronized driving, synchronized crashing. They both sort of turned at the same time. It was lovely.
And in slow motion, you could just imagine some nice violin music. Yeah. It was incredible.
It was a really small tap that just, they both just spun around.
Did the exact same thing.
That ended up with Mick getting a 5-second penalty. I mean, I suppose that's fair, really.
I think it was. He did cause a collision. It wasn't a very bad collision, but it did cause them both to spin.
Yeah. And then that same lap, Russell then pits for mediums. I will just say about the Schumacher and Latifi, obviously both of those drivers not being on the grid next year. I think, obviously, Latifi, again, we've made our views quite clear. Lovely guy.
Go Tifi.
Yeah, go Tifi. He's too good. He's too good for Formula One. And I'm glad he's risen above the sport. Schumacher is a bit of a shame, but I think he just hasn't quite shown, you know, that upper level of skill maybe to stay.
Yeah, but he hasn't shown enough to earn his seat, but it is surprising considering he brings in a lot of sponsorship for the team and has seemed to be quite a money orientated team. They need the money to function. They're not big hitters in the championship, but they need the points and they need the money. And a good way to get in money is by sponsorship.
Yeah.
So it does seem a bit strange to let a young 20-odd-year-old go and not keep them on, but we'll see where he ends up next year, whose team he's supporting next year, because there's rumours, obviously, of him turning up at Mercedes to be their reserve driver. So
yeah, I think maybe Toto said some sort of comments of Schumacher belongs to Mercedes.
I think he's at the Schumacher family.
Yeah, Schumacher family belongs to Mercedes.
The Mercedes see some sort of duty of care towards the family, and they obviously want whatever's best for Mick, which is quite surprising as a Ferrari development driver, Ferrari owned driver that they want maybe under their wing. I don't know.
Yeah, I like the slight language difference there. Of like he belongs to us, not he belongs with us. It's a very strong stance, but it's nice that he possibly has a way to stay within the world of F1 or possibly even back on the track, because I think if you look at it objectively, I think it, you know, he's had two seasons, it makes sense. But then there are drivers who have stayed on the track a lot longer and don't necessarily deserve that as well, so
yeah,
you know, Mick deserves to be there more than Latifi, for example, and he's been there for a lot longer.
Or Stroll
even, Stroll, I mean, Stroll has moments of good driving and good results, but
he's been a bit quiet this season. I don't feel like I've seen that much that's impressed me, especially second half of the season. I feel they've not really had a good car, but he's not been pushing on in the constructors in the same. Sebastian Vettel ended on 37, Lance on 18. So, you know, he was outperformed by his
there's quite a difference
teammate
there.
By like 100% more points. Yeah. So,
And I think the qualifying, they were a bit closer, or maybe even Stroll was ahead on the head to head qualifying, just over the season. But yeah, just when it came to racing, you know, he can't compete with Vettel, so that's fair enough. Lap 45, Perez and Hamilton are battling for that final podium place. Hamilton did not want to be left out on a one stop.
He was moaning. He was saying he wanted to come in, but the team were telling him he didn't really have enough time to come in, get the new tyres, and then
the problem
work
was,
his way.
He was fourth place and battling for that. Or was it third place? Battling for... No, I think it was fourth place.
He was fourth.
They're battling for fourth. With Perez coming up behind him. And if he lost that place, he would be fifth. Worst case scenario was Russell takes him and he's in sixth. If he pitted, he would have been sixth anyway. And then trying to go past Russell and then Perez. Like, I think it was the right call. Because his sort of worst case scenario staying out was not far off his best case scenario of pitting.
Yeah, no, it didn't seem like either way. I don't think he was going to have the pace in the
It was a bit of a lose-lose, really. But I think that gave him the best shot. And I think that's where the team had more information, knew more. And sometimes Hamilton makes good strategy calls from the car, but sometimes there's stuff the driver doesn't know or can't
Yeah,
know.
You can only see your part of the track. You have no idea what's happening.
Yeah.
On the other side of it.
No. And in the end, it did not matter because Hamilton stuck in seventh gear. The car, for the first time, broke down. I know you have quite a strong claim about the W13.
Yeah, so on lap 56, Hamilton retires, which is the first mechanical failure for the W13. So with two laps left of the season... So they nearly made it the whole way through without a mechanical failure, but two laps left of the season,
so close,
they had one. So out of 22 races, two drivers, so 44 times that car's been out, it's had one mechanical failure, which I believe that it might make it the most reliable Formula One car in the history of Formula One.
I can't think of anything, but I don't know. Yeah, to go a whole season and not break down is quite impressive, but there might be a car that has not broken down at all.
There probably is,
but
at some point.
I suppose because there's more races, I think just by races that it kind of has to be, right?
And there's more out now in
than
the
there
desert,
ever has been.
You know.
Yeah.
Before there used to never be one in all of these sketchy
extreme
countries, shall we say.
Yeah.
But now we're in the desert half the time, half the year we're in the desert. So the heat isn't something that the other cars maybe had to deal with as much. And I know that the cars overheat and they don't like 40 degree heat.
No, it's funny.
So maybe
I would have to leave Qatar when it was 40 degrees heat. Everyone just migrated out because it was too hot.
So I think that there probably is, on the balance of how far that car went, the conditions that it was put through. I don't think that they'll want it to be known as that, because I don't think they want to really remember it.
No.
They are putting it on display in their factory as a reminder.
reminder of their lowly lows.
I think to, like, inspire them on, because they have all their championship-winning cars.
It is quite funny that this is, you know, if Hamilton said he never wants to drive this thing again, he never wants to see this car again, the team is destroyed, like, they're all, oh my, and they're still third in the constructors.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't get any wins, they had some podiums, like, I mean, it's still solid.
They did get a win.
Oh, yeah, sorry, Russell got his win, sorry, Hamilton didn't get his win. Yeah, so they got a win, they, you know, had quite a lot of podiums, third in the constructors. I mean, a lot of every other team would kill for that, really, you know, fourth place down.
And especially they weren't down and out in terms of they could have come second in the constructors
as
well.
That's the thing, they were battling for second. So
I think just when you've had the dominance that you've had,
it's going
to
feel like
have a car that's so different from everyone else's and porpoises more or handles worse and you can't figure it out. When you start from Z and everyone starts from A, it's harder to meet. To meet them.
Yeah, definitely. So Perez, meanwhile, is chasing down Leclerc. He's taken off about a second a lap. And on the last lap, he has just under 2 seconds,
yes.
I think. And obviously the commentators are trying to make this a grandstand finish, but that was just a little bit insurmountable unless there was a big mistake from Leclerc.
Yeah, when Red Bull came on the radio and they said striking distance will be, like, you'll catch up to him in the last lap, you'll be able to overtake him in the last lap, but he never really managed to put in the lap times. I know there were back markers in the way, so maybe they caused
He was within he needed a second, really, didn't he?
Yeah.
I think a lap or two more, so it's possible. I know the back markers did hold him up. I don't know how much they impacted Leclerc. We didn't see that. Because he would have obviously had to get through as well. But I think, obviously, he was been on those hard tyres for quite a long time. So I think, in the end, the pace wasn't there. But he did get close. But I suppose he tried his best. And it meant that in the Brazil sort of scuffle between him and Verstappen didn't really matter in the end. Those points wouldn't have saved him.
No, because it was 2 points that he lost out in Brazil, and then he ended up 3 points behind in this race. So you can say it didn't really matter, but I think
it still matters.
Had he been in a different position, I don't know.
No, it could have mattered. That's
it could have mattered.
Yeah. And it matters from a team perspective and a morale perspective.
There's definitely a loss of harmony.
Yeah, but if he'd lost by 1 point, there would have been fireworks going off. So
yes, I mean, there were fireworks going off anyway.
Kind that they had, yeah. So lap 58, the checkered flag, Verstappen cruising to victory, just didn't put a foot wrong. As quite a lot of
he wasn't as far ahead as he has been. At some point, Perez come on telling the team Verstappen needs to increase his pace.
Yeah.
He's holding me back.
Yeah, and I think that comes down to time management a little bit, maybe.
Yeah, I think so.
Or maybe it didn't seem quite as fast as they had been. but it was comfortable enough that they were never really under threat.
No, they were never really under threat, and I know Max puts in very consistent lap times, so he wasn't really in a fight with anyone.
No, it's just race. Managing your tyres, managing the pace, which was good for him. Obviously not quite as exciting for the rest of us, but that was his 15th win of the season, I believe.
Yeah, which is insane.
It is nuts, actually. And obviously he was hampered by some DNFs earlier in the season, so...
Once they cleared up the mechanical issues and the engine problems, it did become probably one of the most dominant cars we've ever seen.
Yeah, yeah.
But also... I know the Mercedes, they once got like 19 races in a season, but that was split more evenly between their drivers. Yeah. Whereas this has been domination over everybody, including his teammate, which I think is something we've not really seen that before. They got 17 wins, and I think 15 were for Max and only 2 were for Checo.
Yeah.
And
I mean, that's crazy. That 17 is crazy. 17 out of 22. And I know that obviously it was a very dominant car, but Ferrari had a lot of chances to win a lot of those back and blew it just by strategy.
Yeah.
I mean, Monaco alone was, I think, one of their worst performances. That's the
I think there'll Leclerc be a lot curse. Of a lot of looking at Monaco from now on with the qualifying incident. The FIA have said they're not afraid to investigate it.
Yeah, I mean, I still think that's a load of rubbish.
Yeah.
Personally.
There are sources telling people that he crashed on purpose.
Sources telling Dutch journalists.
Yeah.
Sources very close to the Verstappen family. I don't know. I just think when you look at signs behind him who does the exact same crash, I think that argument falls apart.
If it was an isolated thing, then we'd look at it and think,
if he was on pole, maybe. Because Leclerc did this.
Leclerc's crashed before when he was in pole position
and then bins it to, you know, no investigation.
No one cares
that.
If he did it on purpose or not.
Whereas it's over third position. I mean, no one's going to do that when your rival team, both drivers are in front of you. It's nuts.
It is nuts. And when you watch Sainz do the exact same thing, you think,
Sainz wasn't on it. And I don't think he was, I think it was Leclerc first, right, and him second.
Yeah, I think so.
So, you know, I'm not sure if Sainz would have done it for second place anyway. Especially Monaco, when you think that's going to be the finishing order. We did have some drivers that are leaving us.
Some tearful goodbyes.
Yeah. Vettel obviously got a lot of love this race.
A lot of love. They went out for dinner, and apparently Hamilton picked up the check. Very generous of him. He earns
lovely guy.
He earns a lot of money, so I guess it wasn't too much strain on his wallet, on his purse strings.
I would like to know how much it costs, because my dad did tell me some ridiculous amount of money, and
20 people at a posh restaurant.
Because I swear
that could
he
be
said
thousands
like,
of pounds.
Yeah, like thousands and thousands of pounds.
Apparently, there was no alcohol. I guess maybe they couldn't drink. I don't know if there's alcohol.
I saw a joke about Hamilton using the company credit card, and Max kept buying bottles of fancy champagne so that they'd go over the budget cap.
I don't know. Can you drink alcohol?
I'm pretty sure it'd be the same as licensed hotels. You can.
Oh, okay. So maybe that was. I just heard they weren't drinking. I guess they had to drive the next day.
Probably you don't want to drive hungover. Yeah. Ricardo also, possibly his last race in F1.
Yeah, I think Ricardo's is more of a see you later, mate.
Yeah, in his mind, for sure.
Yeah, and it is rumored that he'll be a reserver.
Yeah, he'll be
at Red Bull.
Probably be around the grid, so it's not quite the same. And then we also have Schumacher and Latifi, which we've talked about.
Yeah, bye Latifi.
Bye.
See you never.
I'm going to miss him so much.
He's rich, right? His dad's a billionaire. I reckon he's going to go and like buy a Nutella factory, because that's like his two loves in life are like Nutella and Formula One.
Yeah, he's ticked one off the list, so.
So why not do the other, lad?
I reckon he could make like a Willy Wonka's chocolate factory thing, but just Nutella.
It'd be like Canada's river. Biggest tourist attraction. Yeah.
Honestly, if I had $1 billion, I would do some crazy stuff.
Are you going to offer us any examples?
I would buy Mercedes and I would have run them into the ground. I would put Toto in the car and I would put Susie as his partner. I'd get them both as the
drivers. Susie's great. Yeah. She's actually a racing driver, though, yeah, so she might do all right.
Might do all right, yeah. And I would make it so they could only drive backwards around the track.
Okay. Yeah. But then does someone not, like, pick them up and turn them around like in Mario Kart?
Maybe. So, Ellie, driver of the day.
I'm going for Vettel, you know. I think he's my driver of the day. Mm-hmm. He had a good drive. He finished in the points. Mm-hmm. Just. He finished just in the points. But he finished in the points. Sebastian Vettel.
I think he got 56% for driver of the day on the official one. And I think it's well deserved, and I think I've got to give it to him as well.
Yeah, I mean, there were other good drives. Lando had a good drive. Lance Stroll finished ahead of Sebastian Vettel.
Yeah.
But, you know, I prefer Sebastian Vettel, so I'm going to give it to him.
Yeah, yeah. I think, obviously, Alonso was doing quite well before his car sort of broke down again.
Yeah.
And I feel kind of guilty for that one. Obviously, it was my fault. But, yeah, yes. For Vettel's last drive, you got to give it to him. So before we do our lovely final thoughts, best segment of the day, pre-season starts the 23rd of the 2nd, 2023, in 3 months' time.
It's a long time, Harry. I'm going to miss you.
I'm going to miss you a lot, because obviously, I don't know if our audience know this, but we only talk when we record this podcast.
Yeah, we live together, but we're in silence.
Yeah, because this is all gold. We don't want to waste that gold outside of the recording session.
Waste it on the other people we live
exactly.
with.
They don't deserve
it. No, they don't deserve this quality entertainment.
Final thoughts. Final thoughts, last one of the year.
My final thoughts for this race are as follows. Lewis Hamilton has been outscored by his teammate for only the third time.
Oh my gosh.
In the history of Formula One.
And it's also his first season ever in Formula One not to get a win.
Yes, first season not to get a win, which is an incredible statistic mm-hmm. that he...
Yeah, I mean...
He won in every single season.
But I think we have to consider the fact, is Hamilton a washed-up old fart?
Is he?
Is he? Should he be on the track?
When we're making these comparisons with Lando and Daniel, should Latifi take
his seat?
Should Latifi... That is a good point.
And I just think no one's talking about it.
But then Alonso was also outscored by his teammate. But then we spoke about that.
But he had all those DNFs.
Hamilton only had one. Yeah. Well, no, he had more than one. He had crashes, right? Maybe not.
Oh, yeah, but that's on him.
I
mean, mechanical out of his control. Because obviously we know Hamilton is a very dangerous driver.
So my final thoughts...
Dangerous driving, man.
...is that Lewis is the best racing driver to have graced the sport, but...
Now he's the worst.
Now he's washed up. Yeah. No, I love you, Lewis.
He's not going to come on this podcast.
He might come on this podcast. Susie Fowler-Watt might come on the podcast.
No. We might get Vettel now. He's got a lot of free time.
Yeah.
Vettel, if you're listening, buddy.
It's a nice city, York, you know.
We both gave you driver of the day.
We both did, yeah.
That's worth something.
I don't know, we might have like said something mean in other episodes.
Something slightly racist about Germans.
I would never say something like that.
I'm just saying it's possible.
I mean, anything is on this podcast, who knows?
Yeah, I mean, we did cut loose Mitchell, but...
Did Mitchell cut us loose?
My final thoughts are... my final thoughts are this has been a really wonderful experience to share this podcast with... the responsibility of hosting this podcast with you, Ellie.
Oh, thank you so much.
It's really made the season come alive.
Definitely.
But I think it's really important to come back to the main focus is that Red Bull are winners and Mercedes are losers. Big, big losers. And therefore, so are you. And therefore, I'm not a winner.
I'm not a Mercedes fan. I'm a McLaren fan. Okay. So I'm an even worse loser.
Yeah, but we both share that losing, so I think we can put that to one side. Maybe next year, TM. Maybe McLaren will...
They were my big hope for this year. But
We did get our hopes up quite a bit with a four-way championship battle that never quite materialised.
Yeah, yeah, our predictions were way off.
Yeah, so we will cover our predictions in our season review. We'll be coming up shortly. And we'll see what we got right, what we got wrong. Mostly what we got wrong.
Yeah. We've lost a lot, you know, our host, our integrity.
thousands of pounds we've poured into this production.
Yeah, the marketing is the expensive
part. Oh my
part.
Gosh, we really are just pouring in the money.
If anyone wants to donate, we'll
yeah,
start
we need
GoFundMe.
Some sponsors. If there's any cryptocurrency companies out there, vape.
I'll plug the chip in.
Yeah, there we go.
If anyone wants some lovely fish and chips, head down to Mayland for the chip in, the finest chip shop in Essex.
Lovely. That's £1 million sponsorship there. So
yeah,
that'll see
up,
us
Dave.
Through a few more episodes. For now, this has been the Rear Wing in an F1 podcast with me, Harry McKay.
And me, Ellie Ledwell.
Thank you for listening.